From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. If healthcare was a country, it would be the fifth worst polluter worldwide. That's according to Dr. Jonathan Perlin, the president and CEO of the Joint Commission. It's a nonprofit that works with healthcare providers to improve the quality of patient care. Healthcare is a big contributor to pollution, excess waste, and greenhouse gases, which can lead to making their patients sicker. It's something many healthcare institutions would like to change. So Dr. Perlin will talk about how the Joint Commission is now working with providers to offer some concrete ways to do things like reduce waste and reduce their carbon footprint. He'll be doing this on February 7th as part of St. Luke's lecture series on climate and health, and he's joining us now. So Dr. Perlman, can we just start with the basics of what is the Joint Commission?
So the Joint Commission is not a governmental organization, but we work on behalf of the government for roughly the last 75 years to help inspect hospitals to assure that they're safe and effective and efficient and equitable and compassionate as possible. Hospitals that participate in Medicare or Medicaid or other programs of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services have to be accredited. And the Joint Commission is the nation's oldest and largest accrediting organization. It's called the Joint Commission because it was jointly founded by a number of physician organizations like the American Medical Association, the American College of Surgeons, American College of Physicians, Dental Association, and the American Hospital Association. And as such, it brings together doctors, nurses, and administrators to help oversee the process of implementing the inspection standards that come from CMS and driving quality in all of its dimensions in what we call above and beyond standards that help us tackle the nation's most pressing problems. In fact, right now, we are using something that we call the HELP agenda, HELP being an acronym, H for health equity, E for environmental sustainability, A for learning healthcare and the use of AI, and P for performance integration to really help hospitals and healthcare organizations make quality less performative and much more integrated into their daily operations.
So you mentioned that the Joint Commission has been around for 75 years. What was the catalyst to have the commission formed back then?
Well, the catalyst actually is twofold, and it really began with a predecessor organization the American College of Surgeons started in the early 1900s. The reason they started it is that as medicine became more technical, the clinicians wanted to make sure that hospitals had the capacity to offer the technologies that were required for state-of-the-art care. And after World War II, the American College of Surgeons couldn't do it alone. I don't know if people realize this, but prior to World War II, most hospitals were run by physicians. But during World War II, all the physicians were drafted to service. And this was the rise of professional medical administration. And as physicians came back, their absence had been filled by the ascension of professional medical management. And the surgeon said, hey, we need other organizations to come together. And this, the five organizations I mentioned came together about 75 years ago, and it became a statutory, or that is to say, a process that Congress required, concomitant with the initiation of the Medicare program in 1965. So that's the history in a nutshell.
So I know you have what's called a Joint Commission certification. What is it, and why is it important for hospitals to get this certification?
Well, let me divide that question, Gemma, into two pieces. The first piece is that the core evaluation is called accreditation. And to meet accreditation standards, hospitals have to demonstrate that they meet what are called the CMS, or the Medicare-Medicaid conditions of participation. And absent meeting those conditions of participation, hospitals can't participate in Medicaid and or Medicare. And what that means is that they can't be paid by this federal government programs. And so while accreditation is nominally voluntary, a hospital can't exist without being able to serve governmental patients. And so that's the accreditation. The certification is a higher level of of demonstration of competency in particular areas. So, for example, advanced stroke or heart attack care or bariatric surgery would be three examples of programmatic certification. And by and large, those certifications are voluntary demonstrations of excellence in a particular area. Areas of excellence, by the way, that insurance companies and patients might recognize as a seal of approval that this is a good program to go to.
And you're also looking at sustainability now, sustainable healthcare. So can you talk a little bit about, first, what is sustainable healthcare? And then you're adding a new kind of certification around this, correct?
That is correct. You know, like most doctors and nurses and clinicians and health administrators, we all went into healthcare to do good things. But only recently, I think most of us have realized that we're failing the first maxim of healthcare: do no harm. As an inadvertent side effect of our desire to do good for people, we're harming the environment. In fact, by way of background, if healthcare worldwide were a country, that country of healthcare would be the fifth biggest polluter. And the United States is the biggest Wow. polluting state in that country. 27% of worldwide carbon footprint comes from U.S. healthcare. And in the United States, about 9% of all of our carbon footprint comes from healthcare specifically. And hospitals are remarkably energy intense and create a lot of waste. In fact, hospitals are 2 to 5 times more polluting than office buildings, and ORs create more waste than heavy industry. In fact, for every 100-bed hospital, about a ton of garbage is created. And so recognizing that sustainability is a major challenge for our country, we've been inspired by those organizations that really want to move forward in being recognized for their environmental stewardship, and also help others that are just getting started frame their approach to sustainable healthcare practices. It's really interesting. One of the biggest challenges for healthcare, both in rural environments as well as more populated areas, is workforce. And it came out just this week in a report from the Commonwealth Fund that over 80% of health professionals believe their healthcare organizations have to do more in terms of addressing sustainable healthcare. And according to the Robert Half Company, workers between 18 and 34 don't want to work for organizations without a clear sustainability program. And trust me on this, it's rare that the Joint Commission is asked by healthcare workers to inspect more. But those healthcare workers, particularly clinicians and particularly younger doctors and nurses and pharmacists, have been saying, hey, Joint Commission, you guys have to have standards to help us become more sustainable. In fact, they see this in their day-to-day activity across the country. According to Harvard's Chan School of Public Health, 81% of primary care clinics across the country were closed for at least one day in the last 3 years because of an extreme weather event due to climate change. And that means that these resources weren't there when those communities needed the most. So this is also tied directly to building resilience in a world that has been plagued, as we've seen over this past year, by massive wildfires in Canada and in Hawaii, massive flooding in the Pacific Northwest, California in particular, in Montpelier, Vermont, by droughts elsewhere, by decimation of fisheries around Florida and on the Pacific coast. And so there's a convergence of interest amongst both healthcare workers and the general population in fostering more sustainable healthcare.
So I'm not surprised that there are, clinicians and particularly younger generations who are saying we need to be more sustainable and we want to work for an organization that has a sustainability plan. On the flip side of that, though, Dr. Perlman, from just the general public, though, I would think that a lot of people would not recognize the huge footprint that hospitals have. I mean, and I say that because you think of a hospital and you think that it's clean, it's sterile, all of these things. But this must be eye-opening for the general public when they find out this information.
That's a great point. It really is. And frankly, it's eye-opening to clinicians who don't until now appreciate the magnitude of the impact. There's a Dutch nurse named Maria Quick. She's a performance artist, a bit of a social activist, and she's very public about this. She's a breast cancer patient and survivor. And she asked for all of the waste from a single surgery that she had. And she puts that waste around her in a sort of homage to Leonardo da Vinci's Man in the Square and the Circle. And all the waste from her single surgery goes out to a circle that's 60 feet wide. It's on the web, and it's really compelling because it humanizes the extent of the picture of waste. And things like the anesthetic gases we use, some of those anesthetic gases, and there are alternatives. And by the way, if you use less of these things, ironically, you save money. But things like fluorinated hydrocarbons, I know that's a mouthful, that are in those anesthetic gases are 1600 to 3600 times more warming than carbon dioxide. And so these are areas that we can get a handle on because we're fortunate to have alternatives. The second bucket of opportunity is in becoming more energy efficient. And right now, there are incentives, including rural incentives, for organizations to use cleaner power and to improve their carbon footprint. If someone came to you and said, "Hey, we can help you replace the windows and lights and HVAC system in your house, and by the way, you'll have return on investment in under 24 months," you'd say, "Heck yes." And so these are the once-in-a-lifetime opportunities that we're trying to steer healthcare organizations to through our sustainable healthcare certification work. And then finally, the third bucket is the things that we consume. And we're trying to steer toward greater use of recyclable materials. There is no difference between a cloth gown that's laundered and a plastic gown that's thrown out in terms of infection prevention. In fact, the Ronald Reagan Medical Center at UCLA saved over $1 million by switching from disposable, plastic gowns to recyclable, washable cloth gowns. In that process, saved literally tons and tons of waste.
You know, Dr. Perlman, what is the feedback, if any, then from patients in regards to all of this? Because, when you brought up anesthesiology medication, I mean, my first thought is like, is this still going to work? But then when you mentioned going to the cloth, gowns, I'm like, oh, well, that's what happens at my office where I get my mammograms. And I just thought it was a nice touch, right? Making it like, more comfortable. And I'm sure that's part of it, but there's a sustainability issue there by them doing that and not using plastic paper gowns.
I believe that patients are still learning about the intense footprint of healthcare on the environment. And of course, we all go to healthcare wanting our problem fixed, wanting to stay healthy, and wanting the best technological solutions. And here's the magic, is that the best technological solutions can be climate friendly. The best solutions can not only help to prevent negative impact on the environment, but in many instances, they can actually save money. So we need to align forces and align focus. Our younger workers, our clinicians are saying this. And even those who are skeptical about climate change, I think, for those of us, for example, who smelled the smoke from the Canadian wildfires from Maine to Miami, and as far west as where I am today in Chicago, really see the impact of a changed world, and realize it's our responsibility to leave the world safe for succeeding generations. So I think we have a story to tell in healthcare, and our sustainable healthcare certification really helps organizations begin, continue, or expand their decarbonization efforts, and importantly, in terms of appealing to a motivated workforce and to patients who are learning more, help them take a victory lap for doing good things, not only for personal and community health, but for the health of the environment around them.
So, you have mentioned that hospitals will save money if they make these changes. What other benefits does a hospital get when they have a sustainable healthcare certification?
Well, I think those are the main advantages, but I think it's important to take a step back and say, okay, how is climate change affecting healthcare in terms of health for patients with cardiovascular or respiratory diseases, asthma, as an example? Obviously, extreme heat is problematic. Extreme heat in very urbanized environments cause heat islands and are tremendously dangerous. In Chicago, the great heat wave, resulted in almost 9,000 excess deaths compared to a normal summer. As other examples, when I was a medical student, which was a while ago, but not that long ago, diseases like chikungunya and dengue, which were tropical, are now present all over the United States, including in Idaho. In fact, these tropical diseases that have moved north, if you drew a string around the globe at the border of Canada and the United States, every landmass below that has these diseases that used to be considered tropical. By the way, coming further north are diseases like malaria. So these diseases can be excruciatingly painful. They can even be really significant, leading to death. So there's a big health effect. We've already talked about some of the other climate effects, and it affects our economy as well as our health. And it's a health equity issue as well. Those same individuals who, for whatever reason, have social vulnerabilities, don't have the income, live in places they can't move from, or dependent on particular land for farming or waterways for fishing, are disproportionately impacted by the effect of climate change as well. So the whole frame is that this just isn't an environmental issue or a social issue. It's a health issue. It's a health equity issue. And it's a resilience issue because, as I said, 4 out of 5 clinics were closed for at least a day in the last 3 years because of extreme weather. And so we need our community resources to be available when those communities need them the most.
And what has been the overall reaction to this sustainable healthcare model?
Well, I'll tell you quite candidly that when we first started talking about it about a year ago, not everyone was swayed. But after last summer with those wildfires and the floods and everything else, there's almost complete alignment around it. And at a practical level for healthcare organizations that are having workforce challenges, they want to appeal to their workers. And so they're aligning, if not for the moral reasons, for very practical reasons, with the financial opportunities of the Inflation Reduction Act to recapitalize aged and environmentally inefficient infrastructure, there's a very practical reason. In fact, in Ohio, the Ohio Hospital Association has every hospital in the state aligned to improve their infrastructure, taking advantage of these likely once-in-a-lifetime and unprecedented cash payments for improving the infrastructure to be more energy efficient. So moving from some degree of suspicion to a lot of alignment in terms of the really practical issues. So whether some are swayed by the moral and health issues, that's great. But there are just emphatically practical issues like having enough health workers, having workers who want to stay with your organization, and recapitalizing your physical plant that are bringing people along to increasing enthusiasm for sustainable healthcare.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your time today and talking with us about this. Really appreciate it.
Well, let me thank you for all that you're doing. It's a pleasure to be with you. And we thank all of our health colleagues in the great state of Idaho for all they do to keep their communities healthy and safe. Thanks.
Well, we've been speaking with Dr. Jonathan Perlin, the president and CEO of the Joint Commission, about a new way for hospitals to reduce their carbon footprint. He'll be speaking about sustainable healthcare on February 7th as part of St. Luke's lecture series on climate and health. And we should note that St. Luke's is a sponsor of Boise State Public Radio. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, we're taking center stage. Introducing NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of Black-led stories from NPR's podcasts. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.